Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel and the all-new Opel Crossland. Beauty isn't scared of life.
So we're staying with that temporary suspension of the AstraZeneca vaccine in Ireland after concerns emerged in Norway about blood clots in patients who had received it. And to take a closer look at the implications of this decision, both north and south of the border, I'm joined on the line by Dr. Peter Sloan, who's a single-handed GP in Carrow in County Galway, and Dr. Francis O'Hagan, a GP in Armagh and Deputy Chair of the British Medical Organisation's Northern Ireland Committee of GPs. Dr. Sloan, I'll start with you. Good morning to you. Thank you for joining us again on the programme. Are you concerned about the temporary suspension of the AstraZeneca vaccine?
I think, Claire, this is one of the realities of the situation in which we find ourselves, that people have to remember that all the vaccines that are in play at the minute are all on emergency use authorisation or temporary authorisation. And what people have to understand is that, therefore, it behoves all the authorisation bodies and all the national bodies to act with safety first. And I think that reading the background to this, this was based on four cases in Norway where there were thromboembolic events, that's blood clots, that there has been an abundance of caution exercised by NIAC in deciding to put a temporary pause to allow closer investigation. I suspect that it's likely that this will only be a temporary pause. This vaccine is still being used in the UK. There isn't any plan to suspend in the UK, and it's the same in many other European countries. I think that the population of Ireland should be reassured that this is good medicine and good medicine in practice from NIAC and from the HSE, and it wouldn't give me any cause for concern about either the safety of the AstraZeneca vaccine or the other vaccines. This would give me great reassurance that people are watching over what's happening within our vaccine programme carefully and with safety in mind.
Well, Dr. Francis O'Hagan, the other flip side of that, you know, are you hearing from people there where you are in Armagh that they're concerned now that this has been suspended in the Republic?
Good morning. Yes, people are obviously asking questions. And, you know, as Peter says, we do have to look at this in the wider, the whole picture. And, you know, the number of thromboembolic events is no higher in the vaccinated population than the general population. There was a review in the BMJ, which is the British Medical Journal, last week on the 12th of the 3rd, and there's 11 million doses have been given in the UK, and to date there has been no increase in clots than there has been in the natural population than what we would have normally expected. So we are keeping a very close eye on it here, but there hasn't been enough cause for concern to stop the vaccine rollout. And the other thing you've got to remember is as well, the rates of clots in people who actually get COVID-19 is really high. And there has been hundreds, if not thousands, of deaths caused by clotting from people who actually catch COVID.
Mm-hmm. I suppose, though, in Norway, what happened was you had younger people, these four people we're talking about, who got brain clots after vaccination.
Yes, but we don't know that that had, just because it was, you know, around the time of the vaccination, we don't know whether that has actually been caused by the vaccination or whether that's just a coincidence.
Yes, and that's been said both by AstraZeneca and the World Health Organization, that a causal link hasn't been established, and that's what this assessment is all about, isn't it?
Yes, and I think your own CMO, Dr. Glynn, has come out and said that as well, that there is no evidence that there's a causal link.
Okay, and meanwhile, Francis, your vaccination programme is going ahead full steam. What are you expecting this week? Are you expecting big deliveries again this week as you had last week as well, I think?
Yes, indeed. We had quite a large delivery last Friday and we're expecting more this week. So we are now moving ahead to starting towards the end of this week, beginning of next week, due to start our second round of vaccines. Because, as you know, the AstraZeneca is a 10-week gap is the recommended. So the 10 weeks are up from when we first started in primary care. So we'll be starting our over 70s. Probably by the end of next week, we'll have our over 70s with their second vaccine. And then we are currently still giving our first vaccine. We have completed, we've offered everybody over 60. The over 50s are being offered now. And we've also offering and completing all our patients who would normally have had a flu vaccination, in the normal flu campaign.
Okay, Peter, that's a very different picture to the one you have in front of you today.
Yes, well, I'm delighted to say, Claire, that I have, from when I spoke to your research this morning, I've received my needles and syringes for an anticipated delivery of vaccine this afternoon. We are going to hold fire and, until that's in the fridge, and as soon as it's in the fridge this afternoon, we'll phone as many people as we can. I'm hoping to get 60 doses of vaccine, which would allow me to vaccinate down from about 75 to about 72 years of age. I'd requested 120 doses, but due to the logistics of unknown deliveries and unknown numbers of vaccines landing into the country, I've been given as many as I can, which I'm very appreciative of. Mm-hmm. My patients can all being well expect a call this afternoon to give them an appointment time for tomorrow.
Good news for them. But Francis, on that, the fact that we have this lag and you're down doing your over 50s now this week, second dose for others, are you concerned about the lag between North and South?
Look, I'm very reassured here that Peter is very much acting in the same way as we have done. We did have a slow rollout at the beginning, and like that, the minute the vaccines hit our fridges, we were ringing people to get them in. Don't underestimate the size of this task, both North and South, and GPs have really stood up to the mark. And as soon as we get vaccines, we're getting it out there. And I'm delighted to hear that Peter is doing exactly the same that we have done. But, you know, it serves nobody well that the two parts of our island are not getting vaccinated at the same time. And you know, I would like to think that everybody will get vaccinated as soon as possible, because we are one island and the virus doesn't know the difference between the North and the South.
Peter, we're going to be speaking to the head of Cystic Fibrosis Ireland in a moment, and there's a lot of conversation around vulnerable patients and confusion around when cohort 4 will be vaccinated. Are you getting that feedback?
We've had a small number of calls from people, and I suppose I would ask people, you've heard me on before, Claire, and I like to be critical, but I think that this is a very, very difficult situation, because decisions have to be made about who constitutes the most vulnerable, who deserves to get vaccinated as quickly as possible. And I think that that's a movable feast depending upon the supply. So my understanding is that those people who effectively are attending hospital-based care because of the serious nature of the conditions, people with solid organ transplants, people who are on chemotherapy, who have recently finished chemotherapy, those types of patients are being parsed through the hospital list and should be identified. And I would reassure them that I would expect that they will get called and their vaccination will be well organised. Beyond that, I don't think firm decisions have been made about how patients are identified. It may be a mixture of hospital and general practice. I don't know, but I know that those very high-risk patients are being identified through hospital care, and I would imagine that they should be called by the HSE and offered an appointment as quickly as possible. I would hope so. Mm-hmm. And I don't really have any more information than that.
Okay. Thank you both very much, Dr. Peter Sloan and Dr. Francis O'Hagan. Thank you for joining us. As I said, I'm joined now by Philip Watt, CEO of Cystic Fibrosis Ireland. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
What reaction have you had from people with cystic fibrosis to the news that this AstraZeneca vaccine is being paused?
Well, I suppose like any community, there's a mixture of different reactions. But I think most of our community would say it's better to be safe than sorry. And if it's only going to delay vaccinations by a few days and we get a bit news by the end of the week, then I think I would say most of our community will be reassured by that.
Understanding as you are, though, of this, you would like to be given more information by the government on when people with cystic fibrosis will get their vaccinations, not only when, but where.
Yeah, exactly, Claire. And if you think of the vaccination program like a train that's taking on different carriages as it moves along, the train is pulled into a siding, and most people on the train will be understanding for that. But I think what they will be very concerned about is that if they're stuck there for a week, or there is no information about the ongoing destination, and I'd have to say that. All we are receiving at the minute is general information that patients will be called, but it would be much more reassuring if we are actually given what the plan is for patients with cystic fibrosis, because it will be different than those with cancer and those with COPD and those who are post and pre-transplant. It would be really reassuring. And I know the government can't say exactly when because of this hopefully slight hitch in the programme, but we'd like some consultation about the plan and not just trust us, we'll tell individuals when it comes to the time that they're going to be called.
So are you saying that no cystic fibrosis patients have been contacted or that it's haphazard?
There's, as far as we are aware, there's only been one or two people with CF called, and they have comorbidities. In other words, they have other diseases, maybe like kidney disease or liver disease. But as far as I'm aware, and I spoke to a doctor on Friday about this, he is still in the dark about how the HSC is going to roll out this program. And your Dr. Sloan there is saying exactly the same. It's now over 2 weeks since we learned about the cohort four. You know, we have tried to do our best as well. I mean, we did offer to NPHET and NIAC to organise a webinar with our patients, and so far we haven't met with any positive response to that. You know, it's despite offering it several times. You know,
okay. Do you know, Philip, are there other groups in cohort four who have been contacted?
I understand they have, yes, and there are people who are beginning to get their vaccinations, which is absolutely fantastic because we campaign for everybody at very high risk to go into mm-hmm. cohort four. But it does need specific information to be provided to each disease area. And all at the minute, we're getting reassuring noises and general information, which is very good and very acceptable. But we need specific engagement from the HSC with cystic fibrosis, as I'm sure other disease areas are saying as well.
Okay, Philip Watt, thank you for joining us on the programme. Philip Watt is CEO of Cystic Fibrosis Ireland. I'm also joined by Gerald Barry, Assistant Professor of Virology at UCD. Good morning to you.
Morning, Claire.
What do you make of all this?
Oh, it's a serious headache, isn't it? I mean, my initial reaction to it was to kind of bury my head in the pillow when I saw it yesterday morning on the news. It's really, I suppose, disappointing, concerning, but also at the same time, it kind of fills me with confidence in the system, in the sense that, you know, safety is paramount with these kind of things. And it's brilliant to see that the system is putting safety first.
Mm-hmm. That's a very reasonable reaction. But a lot of people won't have that reaction, and it may lead to vaccine hesitancy, would you say?
I think there's no doubt it will. I mean, one of the first calls I got was from my father telling me he wasn't going to be taking the AstraZeneca vaccine after he saw the news. And I think, mm-hmm. to be honest, that's a natural reaction. I mean, there's a certain cohort that will kind of accept vaccines regardless, but there is a cohort of the population that are hesitant and questioning, and that's okay.
Can I ask you what you said to him in response to that?
Well, what I said to him was, I can totally understand where you're coming from. But I said, I think it's important to realise that what they're doing is taking a cautious approach. They've seen something that may or may not have anything to do with the vaccine. They're rightly, in my opinion, pausing examining it, and will only proceed if, again, deemed to be safe. And I think that will hopefully reassure people, in the sense that wouldn't we prefer the system to take that approach rather than turning a blind eye to potential safety issues and bulldozing through anyway?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's better
as
to take
UK
a cautious
are doing.
Approach. Well, I think what the UK and Fairness System are doing is they're looking at the data that they have, and they're proceeding based on that data. These cases have come up in Norway, and the EMA are examining it. And I think the Irish approach is, well, OK, let's pause for a second. Let's not turn our backs on it by any means, but let's pause and let's just have a look at this. And if it means delaying things for a few days to make sure that everything is safe and good to go again, then, you know, that's the right thing to do, in my opinion.
It is hard, though, to understand when you see what's happened in the UK. They've vaccinated over 11 million people with this AstraZeneca vaccine, and they're saying they haven't seen the problems that Norway has experienced.
Yeah, and I think that's in a way what gives me very good reassurance about this, that it's very likely that this is just unfortunate events that have come together and almost bad timing around the time when the vaccine was taken. I mean, the data from the UK is very clear that, you know, they're seeing what one might term kind of expected consequences of the vaccine, things like high temperatures, you know, soreness of the arm, and some other things similar to that. But they're not seeing these dramatic blood clotting events that were reported in Norway. And the fact that they've vaccinated somewhere between 11 and 12 million people have had their first shot of AstraZeneca, you know, that would give us great confidence that what they're seeing in Norway is not directly associated with the vaccine. And it's maybe, as I say, just bad timing, some other kind of occurrence that happened around the same time as the vaccine. But having said that, I think I don't see any harm in pausing for a few days and actually looking at it and confirming that before we proceed.
Then, though, if you look at the task that the government and our HSE might face in convincing people to take the vaccine, even if the EMA says it is safe to do so, given the information that we have now.
Yeah, I think this is where the challenge arises, really. You know, how do you convince someone that something is safe to take when people have a negative impression of it? And I think that's a challenge. But all we can do is, I think, be open and honest, present the information as it is, explain what somebody is taking, the reasons they're taking it, the huge risk associated with COVID-19, and, you know, the massive potential for damage and death potentially if you get COVID-19, and how that risk is so high, and taking the vaccine, the risk of any issues associated with the vaccine is so, so low, you know, that will hopefully encourage and convince people to kind of take the vaccine and to trust in science and to trust in healthcare workers that the evidence is there, that this is a good thing.
Gerald, thank you very much for joining us in the programme. Gerald Barry there, Assistant Professor of Virology at UCD.